Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Wicked Side. As always, we want to issue a trigger warning. The things we talk about can get a little dark, a little distressing, and a little depressing. So if you're not in the right frame of mind or there's not the appropriate audience around, you might want to come back to us a little later or skip it altogether. But if this is for you, then thank you so much, and we welcome you here on The Wicked Side. Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Wicked Side. This is Brenna.
Hey, everybody, it's Tom.
What was that?
That looked like a penis.
That does look like a penis. Well, I mean, you've unlocked the key to creating sound wave dicks. Congratulations.
I moved from arrows, and that is the natural evolution.
And now it's... That's dicks. I like
I mean,
it.
That's a spaceship. That's a Amazon
yeah,
rocket.
Yeah, that's totally what that is. Oh, Lord. Well, before we start, we did want to make a couple announcements. You might have noticed I have been a little inconsistent about uploading lately in our usual time frame. Things have been a little busy. I've been getting busy at work. Plus, I'm just kind of going through a little burnout right now. So we are going to be taking a break. We're going to be taking a break for... But the month, you know, with the month of November, just, you know, kind of giving ourselves a little time to relax, catch up on things. And then we have the holidays and the family stress and everything that's going to be going on during that time. So we're just going to take it a little easy, and then we'll come back to you in December, and we'll have the whole new season 4 going for us. And we're really excited about that. We've got a lot of cool things coming. Do we want to make the announcement of the name for season 4?
What now?
Do we want to announce the name of season 4?
I mean, why not?
Cool. So we did actually come up with a name for this season. The season 4 is going to be themed, and we're calling it The Wicked Edge. So,
hey.
Yeah. And this will focus, mainly we're going to be focusing on stories of warriors, fighters, anybody who is a bit of a badass we're going to be talking about.
Yee.
So I'm really excited for it. We've got some great candidates lined up to talk about, and I know, Tom, that's kind of your favorite.
Yeah, this will probably end up being my more favorite seasons we've done.
Yeah, give you a break from some of the other stuff.
Yeah, gruesome murders and mass deaths of the 1930s.
Yeah. fair. All right, well, yeah, so... just wanted to make that announcement, let everybody know what's going on. Yeah, just going to take a short break, and then we'll come right back to it. We like doing this too much to ever leave it too long. So.
Well, going into the holidays and stuff, we're both just busy. Life and all that fun stuff. And you know, I wouldn't have it any other way, so
yeah,
get right back to it as soon as we both get back straight.
Exactly. So, all right. Are you ready, though, for today?
I guess.
All right. So, Tom, imagine, if you can, someone that you know really well telling you that you are not you.
Okay.
Imagine having someone you've known for years looking you in the eye and accusing you of not being who you claim to be.
Okay.
And then this accusation reaches your family, and they aren't sure who to believe.
Okay.
But let's go back to the beginning of our tale.
All right.
You're born a female named Bridget Boland on February 19th of 1869. You were born in a small town called Ballyvadley in County Tipperary in Ireland. The Great Famine had ended in 1849, and the remaining residents of the village numbered 31, with a total of 9 houses.
Woo! Bustling metropolis.
Yes. But apparently it had been a village of 100 before the famine, and then after, just...
Oof.
Yeah. Yeah. So, your father is a man named Patrick Boland, who managed to survive the famine along with your mother, who is named Bridget Keating. You were married. They were married in 1856. They were both laborers and very poor, living in a small mud cabin. You had siblings, but unfortunately time has lost their names and the dates of birth. We do know that you had older brothers, but that's really about it.
All right.
You were fortunate enough to receive an education. This education includes needlework. And this you have a knack for. As you grow, you begin to use your skills to make dresses and become so successful that you were able to become your family's main source of income.
Yeah, yeah. That's where I can see that. That's where the pocketbook is. She needs pretty things.
Yeah.
I'm going to make that for her.
Uh-huh. You are, by all accounts, bright, charming, and independent, well-liked within your community, and not too bad-looking.
I mean, you know, pretty realistic. I get it. Starting to relate.
You go off to, and I tried listening to pronunciation, so if we have any Irish listeners, I apologize in advance. I know. Clonmel, where you apprenticed as a dressmaker. Shut up, Tom. There you meet a cooper, or someone who is trained to make barrels, casks, buckets, and other wooden containers. His name is Michael Cleary. A whirlwind romance takes place, and the two of you are married August 6th of 1887, when you were just 18 years old and Michael is 26. But not long after the marriage, you move back to Ballybladley and live with your parents, possibly to help your mother, who was in poor health at this time.
Okay. All right. Noble.
Yep. Your already independent streak, however, grows as you begin to establish yourself. Not only do you have your dressmaking skills, but you also keep a flock of chickens and sell their eggs to your neighbors. You manage to get yourself a top-of-the-line Singer sewing machine, which is in your bedroom. You become a professional milliner, which is a dressmaker, and are somewhat of an oddity for your time. But you are ambitious and driven, so you ignore the gossip, both of your industrious nature and that you live apart from your husband.
Okay. All right. Not afraid to do it differently. Noble, hardworking, smart, good-looking.
Mm-hmm.
I'm starting to really relate.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm really feeling the similarities we have here.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know that I'm any good at making dresses, but I'm good at what I do.
Between both you and your husband, you manage to make a pretty decent living, which helps, especially after your mother passes and you're left caring for your elderly father. Despite you and Michael not being laborers yourselves, you were able to use Patrick's history as a laborer to secure one of the best laborers' cottages in the village. This allows you and Michael to live together, and Michael to use the old home as a workshop for his cooperage business. All in all, everything seemed to be going fairly well for your family at this time.
Okay, lots of income, doing what we want. Mm-hmm. All right, let's go.
But now we get to the dark part of the Dark History Podcast.
Fuck it, of course.
On Monday, March 4th of 1895, you went missing after delivering some eggs. Eventually, you make your way home, but you're in bad shape. You're shivering, and no matter what anyone tries, you can't seem to get warm. Your head feels as if it will split in two, and you're very weak. You have trouble breathing. By Saturday, your father was so worried about you that he walked 4 miles in the rain to obtain the services of a local doctor. Michael, we even went out twice more to get the doctor. Finally, on March the 13th, he made it, and you were diagnosed with having bronchitis and possibly a little anxiety. It said you seemed very nervous.
I mean, I'd be nervous if I had that bad bronchitis too.
Mm-hmm. Your family also felt it was necessary to contact a priest.
Oh,
who
wow.
Visited and heard your confession and gave you communion. Some sources say they even contacted a local herbalist as well.
Throw the kitchen sink at it.
Mm-hmm. But during your illness, your husband Michael has been looking at you differently. He's also been whispering to your father, and the two men decide that something more is amiss with you. You aren't simply ill. You aren't even you. Michael comes to the conclusion that you are, in fact, a changeling.
Oh, fun. Mm-hmm. Okay. This just took a turn I didn't think it would take.
Mm-hmm. So, what are changelings, you might ask, for any listeners that don't know or anybody who's not familiar? And here, we have to dive into a very sad part of history. Here, we must explore some of the darker aspects of Ireland's past. Because you see, at this time, there was a commonly held belief that fairies were real, and that they were not kind. To be fair, in your time, Bridget's time, the belief was mostly held in small towns and villages, and science was quickly replacing superstition. The belief, partly, clung to the minds of folks due to the witch trials that took place sporadically throughout history. For those unaware, the Salem witch trials were not an isolated incident. In fact, we have an episode on this very podcast about the Pendle witch trials, which created some of the legislation used to persecute and prosecute those in Salem. According to an article on longreads.com titled Fair Scapegoats, A History of Persecution of Changeling Children, the belief was that fairies and the lands thereof provided power for the dark magic and its users. Not to put too fine a point on it, but it's all a massive pile of horse shit that was used to justify fear and ignorance, especially of those who are different.
It happens. It, everywhere you look in history, in culture, constantly. They were like, you're different! Quit, kill them!
Yep.
It does not matter the reasons.
No, they'll find it. They'll make something up. We all know that women were commonly targets, but sadly, they weren't the only ones. Children were also targets.
Sweet.
Especially children who were sick, disabled, either physically or mentally.
Ugh.
The small-minded villagers, who I have a very hard time being kind to, would then torture these children to death.
Ugh.
The article states, and again, this is going to get dark, so trigger warning, folks.
Ugh. Fuck.
To the end of the 19th century, and probably later, such children were ritually abused by their own parents to this end. Immersed in rivers or placed in margin of coastal tides, stood on hot coals or hung over fires, exposed in freezing weather, bathed in poisonous foxglove essence, beaten, threatened, and subjected to forms of exorcism, these babies and children sometimes survived and sometimes not. Ironically, part of the logic of this treatment was the sense that the fairies cared enough about their offspring to rescue them from the abuse and restore one's child in the process. Even as they tormented those supposed changelings, parents were projecting their own familial love onto fairyland. So bad and far-reaching was the belief that for so long, changeling was almost the go-to term for children who were disabled.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Fuck.
And,
gotta bring all these dead kids to... Nah, why do you even come over?
I know.
Ugh.
I don't know.
I hadn't thought about dead kids in weeks. Then you come over and you're like, oh yeah, by the way, people do horrible things!
Yeah.
Fuck you.
I know.
Ugh.
I know. So... there is a really great podcast that I love, and I'm sure you've heard of it, but Lore.
Uh-huh.
And they did an episode on this. And then I believe it's in that episode where he actually talked about a case. Thank you, truck.
Not a truck. Definitely a Harley.
Oh, okay. Anyway, they talked about a case of... like, he talked about multiple cases, but one in particular was a child who was physically disabled. And his mother asked neighbor ladies to watch him while she went and ran errands. And the neighbor ladies put him on a shovel and held him over a fire until he died.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. And apparently his only problem was he was small, weak, and his legs didn't work very well.
Oh, fun.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, man. Come on.
Yeah. And unfortunately, that is very much a part of Ireland's past.
Oh, there's no culture or person who stands the scrutiny of time.
No, absolutely not. Yeah, no, everybody falls apart. Now, perhaps you can see why being accused of being a changeling is very, very bad news for you.
Fucking horrible.
Especially since the delivery you were making that day, the day you went missing, was supposed to be near the site of a fairy ring.
Oh, sweet. Yeah. Coincidentally.
To be transparent, because I don't believe your father or husband deserve any quarter in the matter, no matter what, the idea that you were a fairy may have actually first been brought up by a neighbor named John Doon, who considered himself to be a bit of an expert on all things fairy.
Oh, yeah? Oh, yeah? Are you... You're a fucking expert, are you? Just a real fey whiz?
Bullshit. An expert on bullshit. You see, you never told the doctor or the priest what was actually happening to you for reasons that are still unknown, but probably fear. Witness accounts say that Michael Cleary and three of your cousins, named Patrick, James, and William Kennedy, along with John Doon, began to torture you.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah. They held you down and were screaming at you to bring Bridget back. Then they began forcing a liquid on you. None of my sources said exactly what the liquid was, but because of the research that I did, I believe it is foxglove. They held you down, forced you to drink it, and then threw the rest on you. It's also believed that, for some reason, within the course of everything, the men also threw urine at you at some point. I'm not sure why.
Oh, okay.
Your father watched the entire thing.
Quick, use the poison. Wait, but I gotta piss. We'll use that too.
Apparently. Some of the liquid was in a saucepan, and I believe that's so it could be heated. Yeah. Yeah. The men carried you to the fire in the kitchen and tortured you more. Witnesses say that there were red marks on your forehead already from the men using a red hot poker to force you to take your medicine. Yeah. You were put on a grate over a fire, and it was demanded that you say your name three times and that of your father and your husband. Apparently, this satisfied the men, who believed they only had until midnight to bring Bridget back. They took you back to your bed, and the female members of the family were led in to tend to you. You were then made to identify every person in the room, which you successfully did, and soon after, the doctor and the priest arrived. Both men noticed how nervous you seemed to be, but it also turns out Bridget didn't get the medicine that was prescribed to her because Michael didn't believe in it.
Look, as much as I love my family, I in no way want them to be involved in the medical process if something is wrong with me. Yeah. I love all of you, but there are doctors for this.
Yes.
Leave me the fuck alone.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Bridget was terrified. No matter what was said or done, Michael was not satisfied. He seemed determined that you would never be Bridget again. And then one fateful night, he sent your cousin, Joanna Burke, and her daughter, Katie, to fetch a local man named Thomas Smith and another named David Hogan. Once they arrived, Michael thrust a bottle of holy water at you, and in a room full of people, demanded you drink it, which you did while saying in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. After this, everyone leaves, and Michael forces you to get dressed and come sit with everybody out in the kitchen. But the entire conversation revolves around fairies, stoking the flames in Michael that never went out. Thomas Smith eventually leaves, which leaves the odd party consisting of Michael, your father Patrick, James and William Kennedy, Joanna, and Katie. Joanna offers you a cup of tea, but Michael refuses to let you have it unless you eat 3 bites of bread and jam. More of his insane tests that he just kept making up to clarify what comes next.
Do you know who these people are? Can you eat this bread and jam? Drink this holy water. Say some Our Fathers. Go.
Yeah. Yeah. Before every bite, he asks you, are you Bridget Cleary, wife of Michael Cleary? And in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost, you managed 2 bits of the dry bread, but you can't manage a third. Fear and illness just made it too difficult.
Oh, joy.
Yeah. Michael then throws you to the ground and begins to jam the bread down your throat. In an entry in LibraryIreland.com titled Bridget Cleary Burned to Death by Michael J. McCarthy, Joanna Burke testifies, saying, Michael Cleary stripped his wife's clothes off, except for her chemise, and got a lighted stick out of the fire and held it near her mouth. My mother, Mary Kennedy, brothers Patrick, James, and William, and myself wanted to leave, but Cleary said he had the key to the door, and the door would not be opened till he got his wife back. I saw Cleary throw lamp oil on her. When she was burning, she turned to me and called out, "Oh, Han, Han, I endeavor to get out for the peelers." I don't know what that means. "My brother William went up into the other room and fell in a weakness. My mother threw Easter water all over him. Bridget Cleary was all this time burning on the hearth, and the house was full of smoke and smell.
Ugh.
I had to go up to the room. Ugh. I could not stand it. Cleary then came up into the room where we were and took a large sack bag. He said, 'Hold your tongue, Hannah. It is not Bridget I'm burning. You will soon see her go up the chimney.' My brothers James, Will, and William said, 'Burn her if you like, but give us the key and let us out.' While she was burning, Cleary screamed out, 'She is burned now. God knows I did not mean to do it.' When I looked down in the other room, I saw the remains of Bridget Cleary lying on the floor on a sheet. She was lying on her face, and her legs were turned upward as if they had contracted in burning. She was dead and burned."
Ugh. Oof. And they all just fucking sat there.
Yeah. Yeah, the fact that they were like, just kill her, we don't care, just let us fucking out, you know, was like, oh, big boys are you.
I hope you know. You got I hope you know you got better brothers than that.
Yeah. Yeah, and the whole time her father was there.
See, I might fuck with you through the, like, drink the holy water and eat the jam and spin around and, you know, pat your head and rub your belly at the same time tricks, but I'm going to stop him just short of lighting you on fire.
Thanks? Question mark? Okay.
Hey, look, if he makes you do the medieval hokey pokey to prove you're not a fairy, I depending on how much I've had to drink, this might not be a bad thing.
Yeah, you might get some fun pictures out of it. Oh, anyway. By this point, it seems the family was coming out of the mass hysteria, and even Michael was realizing just what he had done. He had tortured and then murdered his wife.
Jeez.
He asked Patrick Kennedy to help him bury the body until he could lay her beside her mother. Kennedy refused at first, but later agreed, telling the court he was afraid for his own life at that point. Her body was buried in a shallow grave about a mile from her home, while the rest of her family stayed locked in the cottage by Michael.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. According to the same piece and Library Ireland, Michael then began to threaten Joanna Burke, insisting that she had to lie for him. He tried to guilt both Joanna and Patrick Boland into silence, claiming he couldn't trust them, and saying, "I dread the two of you," as if he wasn't the one to commit murder. But shamefully, Patrick went around along with all this.
Jeez.
And basically his reasoning was, well, she's already dead, you know?
What a bunch of fucked up cowards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. And I don't blame Joanna, because she'd just watch a bunch of men kill her cousin.
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, the moment you start defending them, they throw you down there and sprinkle you with a little lamp oil.
Exactly.
And you're right there on fire.
Dune, the asshat who suggested the whole fairy nonsense to begin with, noticed Bridget was missing and asked about it. Michael told him she went to the fairies. After going to the fairy circle and lurking for her and coming back to Michael after doing a lengthy search on his own, Dune confronted Michael, and Michael broke down and confessed that he had burned her. "You vagabond," said Dune. "Why did you do it?" "She was not my wife," replied Cleary. "She was too fine to be my wife. She was 2 inches taller than my wife." But Dune brushed him aside and said, "Go now and give yourself up to the authorities and to the priest. You will have no living on earth." They went to the priest, who then told the authorities that something was up, but he didn't give them any details.
Yeah, it sounds like a priest.
Despite the fact that Michael confessed to him. And this was the same priest that, you know, had gone and visited her. He was largely cleared of anything because he didn't know about the torture or, you know, anything like that. And he was the one who tipped off the police. And from what I understand, he couldn't tell them everything because it was a confession. Even though he knew something was up, and in the article that I read that this comes from, he said he wouldn't let Michael into the confessional booth. Because he felt like something was just too wrong.
Well, there you go.
So, yeah.
Huh.
The police went and questioned Michael, who simply claimed she got up and left. Despite this, he, Patrick Boland, the Kennedys, and a young man named William Aharnin, I'm probably saying that wrong, but A-H-E-A-R-N-E, were arrested. And from what I understand, William was a young man, like 15, 16. He had been there during both the torture. They basically made him stand in a corner with a lamp or a candle to light everything. So that poor kid to me was a victim as well. You know, he didn't want any part of it.
Yeah, back then you couldn't just be like, Alexa, turn the lights on. You were like, William, hold this candle.
Yeah, exactly. They all lied. Even Bridget's father. 9 people in total were charged with her disappearance. In the end, Bridget's body was found March 22nd by a Sergeant Rogers. Bridget's face remained unburned, but the rest of her body was completely burned. And this article that I had a very gruesome description.
No joy.
Yeah. I won't go into too much details, but it was bad. It was very, very, very bad.
Ugh.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, you've been...
Yeah.
Poisoned and all kinds of other beaten and made to do dumb, stupid human tricks and burned.
Michael had placed a sack over her head and buried her naked in a field. A constable who knew her ended up having to identify her.
Mm.
The people who lied from Michael Cleary eventually came clean and confessed, starting with Joanne Burke.
Oh, finally.
In the end, several people were sentenced, although many of the public felt the sentencing was too light. The list goes: Patrick Kennedy, charged with wounding, 5 years in penal servitude. John Doon, charged with wounding, 3 years in penal servitude. William Kennedy, charged with wounding, 18 months hard labor. James Kennedy, charged with wounding, 18 months hard labor. Mary Kennedy, released due to age. Patrick Boland, 6 months, hard labor. Michael Cleary, manslaughter, 20 years in penal servitude.
Oof.
Of which he only served 15.
I wish it was the hard work. Let's go with that.
For those unfamiliar, penal servitude meant imprisonment and hard labor. Mm. Michael Cleary was released April 28th of 1910. He went to live in Liverpool and then immigrated to Montreal, Canada the same year.
He got the fuck out.
Yeah. The judge presiding over the trial was quoted as saying, "The most extraordinary case demonstrated a degree of darkness in the mind, not just of one person, but of several. A moral darkness, even religious darkness, the disclosure of which had come with surprise on many persons." And that, Tom, is the wicked side of the death of Bridget Cleary, a victim of paranoia, superstition, religious zealotry, and weak minds.
Thanks. It was a good day, you know. It was a great weekend. Then you came over here talking about this, you know, beautiful human, dressmaking, creative, hardworking, unselfish, just, and then, you know, you're a changeling! Die!
Yeah.
Drink this! Do this!
That quick. Oh, well, fuck. There was... Lorigan covered this particular case. Mm-hmm. They have actually... I believe it's on Amazon Prime. You could go watch it now if you wanted. But they cover this case. And they have actors and things like that. And in that, it's largely implied... and I'm not sure how historically accurate that is. That's why I didn't bring that up in my telling.
Mm-hmm.
But it's largely implied that... Michael was very insecure about Bridget's independence and about the fact that she made way more money than he did.
Fair.
And in that time, that wasn't common at all. So.
I wouldn't take it off the table.
I wouldn't either.
Ugh.
But, yeah. Yeah.
Super fucking fun.
Is really wild, too. Like, the trial is insane.
At least everybody came around and finally admitted the truth and confessed or whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck.
I was also not surprised that it was Joanna who spoke first.
No, I mean, the youngest with the most heart and probably the most least jaded conscience.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh.
Yeah. And I guess there was also the fact that, like, they were yelling at Michael to stop, but nobody actually tried to intervene. Nobody actually tried to save her.
Yeah. Yeah, nobody, you know, literally didn't piss on her to put her out.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah.
I've never been able to sit through seeing things done like that. Like, I've never been that apathetic toward anything.
Yeah. I know, there's... Like, Game of Thrones, of course, is the big thing. Spoiler alerts, you know, for a show that's how old at this point. But the torture scenes in that, I had to leave. I couldn't stay and watch them. Knowing that the actor was fine, that he wasn't actually hurt.
Yeah.
And I still couldn't do it.
Yeah, that's what I find, like, horror movies like Saw and Hostel and, like, the ones that are just torture porn, essentially.
Yeah.
I find those really hard to watch for that same reason. I know it's special effects. Agreed. I know it's, you know, whatever, but, ugh.
Yeah. See, it's why, like, movies about ghosts and things like that never frighten me. Like, you get some good jump scares and things like that, but...
Right, yeah.
At the end those of
aren't
the day,
ones that haunt me.
Yeah, it's fine, but when it's stuff like you said, like the torture porn, it's like, I can't, man. I can't. There's nothing in me that finds this as an escape. This is, like, this is terrifying, you know?
Yep.
And this especially got me thinking about, like, that they had the whole, like, burning thing and how they were describing putting them on a grate and above fires. Like, that literally happened in that Silent Hill movie.
Yeah.
So it's like, and that was the hardest part of the movie for me. I almost got up and walked out because I felt like I was going to throw up.
Ugh.
You know?
Yeah, I get it. Yeah, torture scenes.
Yeah. Ugh. So, like, I don't know. But it was, to hard, me, it's
the hardest torture scene ever to watch, ever, for me. So it's number one. James Bond, Casino Royale, where he is tied to the chair without a bottom, and the dude uses a knotted rope and just beats his gentleman parts to jelly.
Oh.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it, but I heard it's brutal.
It is. I left with a stomach ache. Like, it was like being kicked in the balls. It was terrible. I don't know why that just came across my mind, but the worst. It was like torture to sit through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, interesting too about this case is there was a whole lot of political BS going on between Ireland and Britain at the time.
Oh, yeah?
And a lot of...
You don't say?
Yeah. Well, a lot of British government officials were pointing to this case and saying, look, see, these people are savages. They need a firm hand. They need our guidance. They, you know, they can't be left, you know. Yeah. And it was used to back up a lot of bigotry. It had some very far-reaching, like, political effects and social effects. It, as awful as it sounds now, like, to us, this is just an awful story, but then it had ripples that it affected the lives of so many people.
Well, it was possibly an economically influenced murder that was either justified or shrouded with pseudo-religious beliefs. And then, you know, the lying and everything, then trying to convince all the other people to lie as well. Like,
yeah.
There were so many layers to this. Ugh, they're all gross.
Yeah, well, apparently, too, before he did the whole thing with bread, Bridget, like, had a little spark of her old self.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just pissed off and scared and tired of feeling scared, you know? And she, at one point in time, looked at Michael and basically said, you only think, or you're only saying that I was taken by fairies because that's what you were told happened to your mother.
Oh.
Yeah. And then his response was, did she tell you that? And her, Bridget's response to him was, oh yeah, of course. You know, she talked about it for 2 days. Just sarcastically and fed up with him, yeah, you know, kind of thing.
You don't talk about a crazy guy's mom, and you definitely don't, like, lie about it and say you heard it from the dead one. Like, because you're going to die too, for sure.
Yeah.
They will write a book about you.
Yeah.
Oh.
And I can't help but feeling it was used a lot like some people use the Salem witch trials, or the witch trials, I should say, not the Salem witch trials, but the witch trials too. And like, hey, I don't want to be married to this lady anymore.
It's a convenient way to get divorced.
Yeah. And some people pointed to...
Now, hold on. At some point in anybody's relationship that has an ex, you wanted to set that person on fire. You didn't, but you wanted to. You would have at any given point have just, like, walked up, thrown a cup of gas on him, a match, and walked away like the hero from an explosion. Not even fucking turned your back. Cool guy music playing, pigeons fucking gone.
I can't say as I have, or if I have it, I just wanted to be very brief. Just enough. Just enough. Maybe the edge of the pants just to scare him a little, but that would be
it. I get it. I do. But it is unacceptable in polite society. We do not allow that.
Yep.
No setting your partner on fire for divorce reasons.
Yeah, just to get out of a marriage.
Pay your $250, talk to the judge, get it over with, sign the papers. Mm-hmm.
In this case, I firmly believe it was a matter of pride. Yeah. His pride was wounded.
No, she was a witch. She didn't leave me. She was a witch.
Yeah.
A complete and utter witch. Just the...
Yeah. Well. Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
But it...
Were there more dudes killed in the Salem witch trials than women?
No. There's only one male killed in the Salem witch trials, and that was that badass old guy. They kept trying to get him to confess, and they were, like, torturing him by pressing, which was putting heavy rocks on his chest.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when they asked him, are you going to confess yet? And he looked at him and said, more weight. I'm like, oh.
He said, fuck you.
Hard motherfucker.
You're not making me beg, bitches.
That is possibly some of the most badass lines ever uttered in history.
Yikes.
More weight. Fuck you. In the most...
Yeah. It's a medieval fuck you, for sure.
Oh, it definitely was. It wasn't medieval, but yes.
You know what I mean. Everything's medieval prior to the 1980s.
Yeah, but that was... Yeah, the Pendle Witch Trials were really interesting, too. And again, a lot of that, like, class played into it, you know? Mm. I know you weren't with us at that time, but to give you a little bit of that backstory, because I don't think you'll know. It was a girl was walking down the road. She was begging for her family.
Mm-hmm.
And she came across a... traveling salesman kind of thing, tinkerer, I think they called him, and he wouldn't give her anything, so she was like, ah, curse you, you know, and he actually, like, had a stroke, what we now know was a stroke, right? Mm-hmm. Then, like, worst timing. She thought she had actually done it.
Oh, geez.
Confessed to being a witch.
Oh.
Which led to her family then being pulled into it, and her little sister being taken and basically brainwashed into making up a bunch of stories about her family.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
And, like, she lost everybody. Her mother, her grandmother, her brother were all put to death in a trial that was laughably called a trial. It was, yeah. And in, like, a weird turn of events, when she grew up, she was put on trial for being a witch. Yeah. Now, she escaped that one because in that case, it was proven that the guy making the accusations had coerced his son into lying, and he was going to villages and basically saying, hey, if you don't pay me, I'm going to have my son tell everybody that he saw you doing witch stuff.
Oh, nice. Good. I like his scam.
Yeah.
It's a great medieval scam.
Yeah, but like, he was busted doing it.
I saw your daughter doing meth! Give me the money.
But I guess it was not long after that the witch trial thing like wildly started to fall apart.
I know how he'd do it. He'd go into a new village and he'd have like a map with some words written on it. Mm-hmm. And he'd walk up to a woman and be like, hey, can you read this for me? And she'd read it and be like, witch!
I guarantee he couldn't write it either.
That didn't matter. If she could, then witch!
Right? Oh, God. Yeah. It's just interesting to me how all of that is so interlinked. And, like, some of the papers that I was reading on it, they were talking about, like, stuff like this, like the fairy accusations going on in Italy and France and places like that, too.
Hey, being accused of being a fairy in some countries is still lethal. Look at Iran. Poof.
I know that, it went viral, but there was a woman who found a child who was being starved to death because they had accused the child of being a witch because his eyes were two different colors.
Oh, fucking sweet.
Yeah, and she, like, actually ended up adopting him. But the picture's pretty horrific. You know, she was giving him water, and he's just basically a little walking skeleton. At that point. Yeah.
People are fucking monsters.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty universally, yeah.
Ugh.
But, yeah. It is... It's sad.
Oh, man. Yeah. Why you gotta come over and ruin what is an ostensibly great weekend?
Don't know, because I can.
Just...
Like I said, because you keep letting me in the door.
Well.
You haven't perfected your anti-Brenna barrier yet.
I just got to get a different dog.
Yeah, yours loves me.
I know. It's a shitty guard dog that way. Just keeps letting you walk right in.
Yep. Oh my gosh. Well, when I first got here and I pulled out the burger because I hadn't eaten yet today.
He begs like a gentleman, doesn't he?
He put his little head on my knee and just stared up at me with the biggest eyes I've ever seen.
He's not an aggressive beggar, but he's a constant one.
Uh-huh.
And he knows go lay down.
He also knows a weak link when he smells one, and I am a weak link. So.
I know, that's why you had to tell me to tell him to go away.
Exactly.
I can't do it.
Tom, help.
Well, my son and my nephew were hanging out, and... my nephew slept over, so Amanda made a breakfast, and of course all morning he had the boys feeding him bits of bacon, so run back and forth to one or the other, and they're just sitting there watching TV and absentmindedly feeding him bacon, and he's running a marathon.
Oh yeah, he's just happy.
Yep. That is the quickest way past my security system.
Yeah, food.
Yeah. I don't know who you are. You got a mask on. Wait, is that Cookie? I want a cookie. Let's get a cookie. Come on. I'll sit. What's up?
Lace isn't very picky. I have to keep chasing her out of my garden because the local stray cats keep wanting to nest in there.
Mm-hmm.
And they poop in there. And apparently that is just fine shit to her. So, yeah, that's... doggy caviar, I guess, because she goes for it, and I'm like, stop it. You're disgusting. Leave it alone.
I say, my dog's not picky, but I haven't seen him rabidly go after other turds.
She's broken. She's a very sweet dog, but she's broken.
Yeah.
That's all right. She fits in.
Fair enough. Opposite the toughest, scaredest dog I've ever met in my life.
Mm.
I get it.
Yeah.
Yes. Everybody walks by. Fuck you. Fuck you. Oh, that noise is too loud. Burr.
Yeah.
Run and hide.
Lace barks. We actually had to rescue one of the strays from her recently.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
I wasn't there for it, thank God, because I would have freaked the fuck out. But Aiden and Scott had let Lace out, and what they didn't realize is that there was a kitten laying on our steps.
Oh, cool.
Who belonged to one of the strays, and Lace got her and had her full in her mouth, and Aiden and Scott had to chase her down and, like, pry her jaws open to get her to let go of the cat.
Oh, fun. Yes. And let go of the cat nugget.
Yeah, they said that the kitten ran away and seemed unharmed and, like, turned around and was, like, spitting and hissing and, like, just pissed.
Yeah.
And then ran off. So they're like, I think she's fine. She's well enough to be angry. So.
I was just resting there. And then all of a sudden, it's trying to eat me.
That was a bad day for the poor kitten.
You know, I'm not a fan of cats. I'm only glad about the story because the cat is okay, but fuck yeah, get that cat, Lace.
Well, we started joking and calling it the cat and nugget. So. Yeah.
One bite, yo.
Yeah.
That's fucking funny.
Well, the kitten nugget, that's what it was. Kitten nugget.
Take it.
Kitten McNugget. Trademark. But yeah. Pardon me. But yeah, we've seen it wandering around and they go, oh, there's the McNugget.
Yeah, our dog has a beef with stray cats and the squirrel.
Yeah.
And it's the same fucking squirrel. It's the same one. It loves sitting on the fence. It knows he can't do shit if he's up there.
Yeah.
And it walks the fence and talks shit. And it'll make him run the yard. And it'll sit up there and fucking chatter at him. If he comes outside and that squirrel's in the tree and notices, he'll fucking talk shit to him from a tree branch.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I don't mind the stray cats in our neighborhood because we have... We're surrounded... But it means Indiana. We're surrounded by fucking fields.
Yeah.
Really close. And I'm like, if they're not there, field mice are going to be an issue. So I'm like, leave the fucking strays alone. None of them are skinny. There's a reason.
Yeah, there's too many old people where you live. All the old ladies out there feeding them.
No. In fact, most people don't because for the same reason. They want them to catch the mice and everything from those fields.
Fair.
So,
keep them hungry.
Yeah.
Pack of roving cats.
Ugh.
It's like a nightmare of mine.
Yeah, but they're, I don't know. They're all pretty sweet, though, for the most part. Like, they'll come up and let you pet them for a little bit, but it's very much the cat thing of, all right, 2 seconds, that's it. You got your hit, now go away.
I got mine, you got yours, now exactly. Walk away.
Unless you have a treat for me, this transaction ends. Oh, all right. Well, I think that's a good place to end this season on.
Yeah. Time to take a deep breath and catch up on the writing and
yeah,
just recharge the old batteries.
Well, we have had a really good season.
Yeah?
It's
been
a lot
of fun.
Really great stories. There's been a lot of really great tales, a lot of really great reactions, a lot of sadness. But
I was about to say, it really depends on your perspective on this whole great story
I mean from, like, our interactions. I don't mean...
You tell a great story. These are fucking horrible great stories.
But, yeah, I enjoyed this season. I really did.
Yeah.
I think we had a good season. It was our first solid season together.
I'm not an alcoholic yet, so
hey,
it's been a great season. I think I'm, like, limited it.
Yeah. Is this success or is this a challenge?
Yeah, I could see that.
I'm trying to determine, is this celebration or do I need to double down?
I think that's a personal decision you can make over the hiatus.
I'll let you guys decide. How about that? You get to decide Tom's fate.
They're always going to choose the one that's worse for me.
If I don't see Mad Max style comments somewhere going double down,
nobody's gonna be on my side on this. Nobody who is listening to the Wicked Side is gonna want the happy content.
Oh god. Yeah, but we're really excited. We've got big plans coming up for the next season, and might have some cool new changes on the horizon. Really excited for it, though. And yeah, again, we not just to kind of recharge the batteries, but also prepare for it, because I really want the next season to be something special. So
every episode something special for me, sis.
And not necessarily in a good way, huh?
I wasn't specific for a reason.
Fair enough. Fair enough. As Dad always say, don't ask questions you don't want the answers to.
But I'm looking forward to getting back at it.
Me too. Me too. Yeah, it's always a good time. So.
All right, everybody.
All right. Well, thank you all for joining us today. If you're a new listener, thank you so much. Sorry you caught us at a season end, but you have a plethora of other episodes to listen to and catch up on. And thank you to any returning listeners. You guys are amazing. And we will see you here in a month now. Thank you to the paranormal podcasting community for your continued support. We appreciate you guys and everything you do for us. And, yeah, we'll see you on the other side.
See ya.